Well, finished supplement one, which was the chapter from Srimad Bhagavatam on Krishna extracting Uddhava in the process of deity worship. And now supplement two is then describing, from this more technical explanation, then elaborate deity worship. So Krishna Kshetra here writes, where steady, enthusiastic, and well-trained pujaris are present, it may be possible and advantageous to establish an elaborate standard of worship, especially for the main deity, and particularly for Shaligram Shila. An elaborate standard of worship should include daily offering of most, if not all, of the 64 upacharas, and offering several additional items which are pleasing to the Lord. It may also include more elaborate preparation for worship, purvanga karma, chanting of more mantras and stuti, showing mudras, and offering more opulent articles than in the general standard of worship. Again, as we mentioned in the introduction to Volume 1, we should note that more elaborate is not necessarily better or a higher standard in deity worship. Krishna is concerned with quality of service and devotion, not sophistication. Nevertheless, where quality can be maintained for a temple facility for it, there may be room for an increased service to the deities. There are many ways service to the deity can be increased, and one of them is to attentively offer them more elaborate worship. We should also note here again, as mentioned previously, that deity worship standards should not be increased or decreased whimsically. Whatever adjustments are made for a particular temple, following the guidelines of this book, should be approved by temple authorities and included in a written description of the temple standards to be kept safe for reference. So, as the understanding of the pujaris is there, the training is more, the facilities are more, then one can consider expanding the standards of worship, not so much the standards, but the elaborateness of the worship. Also, standards. It's important in this to note that the increase of standard is supposed to be an increase in pleasure for the deity. So two aspects are there: is the quality means, let us say you do, add offering more items, or the quality of the item is more, or the technicality in which you offer that item is more. So these are various ways that one can decide how to increase or make it more elaborate. So these aspects, are to be considered. Now, here, more elaborate is not necessarily better. Because if by making it more elaborate, then it makes it more difficult. Devotees get caught up in these things and cannot remember the deity properly, can't offer things with devotion, they're so absorbed in the various rituals. That's not necessarily better. Better means whatever is best for the time, place, and circumstance. The kind of devotees you have there, the community you have, the kind of deities, the facilities, the preaching. So many different aspects are there. Like if you're in a community who understands and respects higher, very elaborate deity worship, then having elaborate deity worship is going to be very important. So the ritual can be more, and so many things like this can be more. But now let us say you're in an area where it's not going to be necessarily appreciated. No one's going to care whether it's more technically more elaborate or not. You have the facilities, or there's more, funds or devotees, then you might consider elaborate means, better outfits, more flowers, things that you can visibly see. Like this, the beauty of it, like that. Or for, or more elaborate boga offerings, better ornaments, better scents. In other words, those five essential points that Krishna likes. Nice scent, nice flowers, nice clothes, nice ornaments, nice yoga. So that's always, if you have more funds, that's always the thing to increase. The devotees have more understanding and maturity in the puja, you can increase the elaborateness of the ritual. So it depends upon what's there, but it depends very much on the situation, community, and the devotees themselves. Then his final point that he makes in this, in reference to this, is that this can't be whimsical. It can't be just that you just got a few new devotees. No, it has to be you have steady devotees. It's going on for some time. Where money is coming, it has to be steady. It can't be just somebody gave a donation, okay, what can we do and just increase? No. It has to be something you can steadily maintain. And then here it says it should be approved by the temple authorities, and it must be kept a written record. Otherwise, then you'll see when new pujaris come along, they just introduce their own standards. Like this. I've seen one temple, devotees would come, stay 6 months, but because it's in India, and, you know, they think, you know, they come here and they get very much into their, Vaishnav, Siddha Bhav, and all this, and they would introduce all kinds of elaborate things into the worship. And then after 6 months when they're leaving, then the new pujari who comes along, then they would reveal to them the proper standard that they have established. So the next devotee starts off on that elaborate standard, and then when he starts worshiping, then he adjusts it around and adds in things he likes. And it just like this gets more and more elaborate, and the head pujari doesn't even know what's going on. He just figures it out later when he sees that, so many things are happening and all that. And then it's like, no, the other one said this is a standard, you can't change. Once it's a standard, you can't change. But who introduced the standard? Who approved the standard? Right? So unless the standard is approved, unless the standard matches, unless the standard is actually a standard, then how is it a change of standard to go back to what it's supposed to be? So it's very important. It has to be approved. Something like that. Has to be approved. Yes.
There's a question on this mudras. We also use mudras. I think Sadhguru Goswami mentioned that this can be an impediment or the development of Rav Krishna.
He says not default love of Krishna, he says for Raghunatha Bhakti. If you're interested in Braj Bhakti, then it can be an impediment. First, you have to understand, it's just like this. It's just like, let us take eating. Okay? Now, you have to eat. Right? If you want to maintain the body. So, now, one has to understand, if I say like this, eating of non-vegetarian foodstuffs is detrimental to spiritual advancement. Okay? Now, that seems to us very obvious, because we can understand the difference between non-vegetarian foodstuffs and vegetarian foodstuffs. Okay? But now, let us say you take someone who does not actually understand the whole science of eating. To him, it's just all food. You understand? So when you tell him no non-vegetarian, he's thinking, well, that means no food. So eating is not really detrimental to advancement. Understand? So when we say mudra, we also have to understand the science of mudras. Like that. Because in mudras, there are different groups of mudras, so many groups of mudras for different functions. The essential point of mudras is, mudra means that which gives pleasure. Like we see, it says in Log, every step is a dance. The dance consists of mudra. Right? So that means the mudras go along with the activity, along with the mood, along with the mentality. How do you tell someone, let's say, is happy? By the mudras that the body manifests. How do you know they're upset or sad or tired? It's all by mudra. So we have to understand which mudras we're talking about. So here, and then in the worship, you have to understand the worship. because there's many times a great confusion between yoga, which is preliminary to Purpanga Karma, and Pija, which is the offering of the items to the deity, offering of the 64 items. Yoga is preliminaries to that, but in yoga you see I'm offering things, I'm doing things, I'm offering prayers, I'm purifying. So it appears the same as the other, you know? So one has to be able to discriminate between the two, you know? One has to be able to discriminate. It's that you have to be very clear what is yoga and what is ija. I mean, 101% clear. You know? That you know exactly what the demarcation is, you know what the purpose of both of them are. One is prepare yourself, and the other one is the actual offering. So now in yoga, I mean, how you say, in ija, for those who are into Vaikuntha worship, they use mudra there. But for those who are into Vrindavan worship, there are no mudras there. Right? Except that there's five that Krishna likes. The Venu, the Vanamala, Bilva, Kustuba, and Srivats. Yes, but those are themselves a part of worship. It means they on their own are worship. They're not part of some other worship. You understand? You're not affecting worship through the mudra. The showing of those mudras is an offering. Yeah. But in the Vaikuntha worship, you want to offer an item, show the mudra, then you do the item. So it just makes everything more formal and all that. So they don't do that in Vrindavan worship. But in yoga, mudras are very much used. Yes, it's still used. I mean, you see Rupa Goswami, when he writes a padati, it's full of mudras. And Purvanga Karma. But once it comes to the worship, there are no mudras. So this is how one must understand this point. You know? So one has to understand the purpose of them and what they do. So in purifying, they get things done. Because yoga means it's a subtle form of purification. You're purifying the mind. Right? Because the mind is attached to the senses and the external objects, you purify from their back. Understand? You start with the external and then bring to the internal. When the external situation is pure, the mind becomes more peaceful, more situated in goodness. And then from there, then you grab the mind and then purify it by dhyana and manasapuja. Like that. And before that, you do it with external things and with understanding, changing the consciousness. And like so many aspects are there. But they're all subtle. So these subtleties are done with mudras. Like that. But in the worship, then what you're offering, that is the item. There's no formality, you know, as such. Still some formality is there, but it's not the formality that is going to be a disturbance. I mean, we may still say idam asanam, but it's, what are you going to say? You know? We don't have a rasa with, we don't have a manifest rasa with Krishna, that we have something that we're going to say to him. Please come and sit. As a cowherd boy, you may say in one way, as the mother just put a, you know, the parental says in another, conjugal in another, you know, like this. All these will have different ways. Idam asanam, everybody uses it, gets it done. Because the point is all these rituals are important to purify the conditioned nature and bring us to the transcendental platform. Like that. So therefore, it on itself is going to be vaidhi. So the thing is Vaidhi, the rules of Vaidhi are always followed in temple worship. Doesn't matter. Even when you're a Paramahamsa, they're followed. You know? In principle, in detail, you know, just like this. But in the beginning, we'll be performing the ritual of Vaidhi, and our consciousness is in Vaidhi. But as we progress, then we'll be performing the rituals in Vaidhi, but consciousness will be in Raganuga. And then with time, then rituals are in Vaidhi, consciousness is in Prema. Or in Bhava and in Prema. Understand? So externally, it will always look the same. So therefore, the external should not have anything in it that's going to impede that development from bhakti to raganuga to bhava to prema. Like that. That's the point. So in other words, what, yeah. Is that clear? Okay. Then here, in worship of Shalom Shila, he gives many quotes on that about what is happening. Krishna Kshetrabhu writes here, Srila Prabhupada encouraged the worship of Shaligram Srila by Iskcon devotees who can perform the service steadily and carefully. End quote. The Shaligram Srila should be worshipped with Tulsi, where a sufficient quantity of Tulsi leaves are available. Worship of Shaligram Srila should be introduced in all Iskcon temples. Shaligram Srila is the form of the Lord's mercy. To worship the deity with the 64 items mentioned may be a difficult job. But the Lord has become so small that anyone in any temple can carefully handle deity worship simply by performing the same activities with Shaligram Srila. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 24.336 purport. Now, here he says it should be introduced. That means the devotees should become qualified that they can perform it. It doesn't mean just it should be introduced, so then, you know, it's just like you have a little children. You say, yes. You know, marriage should be introduced. It doesn't mean that 3 years old they're all getting married and, you know, performing their household duties. No. It means that you know that they're going to get married, so you train them. So when they're of marriageable age, they're qualified. So when you say it should be introduced, it means that devotees must also be trained what is deity worship so that they can perform Shaligram Srila worship properly. Otherwise, there should be speculation. You mentioned before, high standard comes to mind. I remember seeing in one temple, they had a high standard that they thought they had a high standard, that every day they would bathe the Shaligram Srila in Panchamrita. Right? Prabhupada mentions it can be done occasionally. If it's too difficult to do every day, you can do it on special days, like Ekadasis or, you know, like that. You pick some time when it's nice. More elaborate worship there, and you bathe with Panchamrita. So this temple had a very, you know, quote unquote, high standard that every day they would bathe the deity in Panchamrita. Now, problem comes is to bathe them in Panchamrita takes a little time to get all the ingredients together. You have to keep the ingredients. It's that. So the pujaris didn't have time because of, you know, other aspects of the high standard, which we will mention after. So then, what used to happen was the day before, then a new bhakti would go into the kitchen and take the glass jar from the mixing machine, go to the refrigerator and get some milk, get a little yogurt, get a little ghee, you know, pour in some honey, pour in some sugar, stick it on the blender, zzz, whiz it up nicely. And then pour it into a little silver cup and put it in the refrigerator. So now what happens when you mix milk and yogurt together? So they stay as two separate entities? Huh? Cheese, but no, just with time the milk turns into yogurt. Right? And then when you blend all these up, you don't exactly have Panchamrita where you have a nice preparation. But it's basically, technically, it's more like Madhuparka. You know, so you're doing a Madhuparka snan. Madhuparka means all these items are mixed. You know? Like, so they're saying high worship, but high worship means you take the time and that to do it properly. So they wanted to do it and say, we're doing Panchamrita, but the day before they do put it in the fridge and, you know, and the, you know, Lord gets this nice freezing cold Madhuparka snan. So you can see it's in the mind of pujari that we're doing high worship, but as far as Pancharatra goes, it has nothing to do with anything. No one bathes in Madhuparka. You know? Like that. Another thing is they thought they had a very high standard of worship, is they had 9 Shaligram Srilas. According to the Shastra, you take one of them as Pradhan, or the main Srila, and worship that one elaborately. You can have as many other shaligrams as you like, they're only baked in water. And you put tulsi and chandan bas. It means every day you wipe off the tulsi chandan, pour some water on them, you know, or put a little oil and pour some water on them, and then put some tulsi and chandan bas, like that. Those shaligrams don't even have to be dried. Because the Lord likes, because he's been living in Gandaki, where he's always wet and all that. So he likes it like that. It reminds him of the Gandaki. But that's the extra shilas. The Pradhan Shila is accepting the worship on behalf of the deity, the main deity. So that Shila has to be dried and done everything you would do for the main deity. So now, instead of doing it for one, they had a very high standard. Everybody else just worships one very nice. We worship all nine. Our standard is so high. So now what happens? Right? You can guess from the previous example. Is, therefore, the worship for all nine was done so fast, they didn't have time, things like putting tulsi where they sit and this, and they just don't have time, and they don't have that much tulsi, and they don't have this and that. So what's the use of that? Better to do one nice, and the other is really simply, than say you have a nice standard, and it's just not nice. So we can see is here, we also have to understand what we're doing. So saying we have a high standard, but we have to see that it actually is a high standard. Like that. It means, see, it's like this. We could take it from another side. Let us look at it in a broad-minded way. Is that the devotee wanted to take the greater effort for the Lord's pleasure. So he's arranged for opulent circumstances and items and all that. So we can take it from there. That, yes, the thought is sincere. The desire is sincere. But at the same time as the rules are given by Krishna, the following of Krishna's rules is also part of the affection for the Lord, doing it the way the Lord likes it. Right? It means the reason that we have these items of worship, who have they come from? Right? Pancha, as we discussed the other day, where did the Pancharatra come from? Who spoke Pancharatra first? Krishna spoke. Right? Brahma said, you teach me the Vedas again, just give me the essence. So he expected a few shlokas. You know, or a few philosophical points. Instead, Krishna himself revealed Pancharatra. So Krishna felt that this essence of the Vedas is to worship the Lord. You know? Means the philosophy is there. Somebody is the Lord is God, we're his servant, and we're spiritual, and the material nature is material, and to use the material nature in Krishna's service, because the material energy belongs to Krishna, and we're Krishna's servant. So sambandha is there. Prajojana is pure love, develop pure love for God. How are you going to do that? How are you going to show us we're the servant, and how are you going to develop that pure love? Right? It's going to be through the process of abhideya, or service to Krishna. And in there, for the conditioned soul, then, what is very essential, is that engaging the senses in the Lord's service. Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchate. Bhaktir Uchate. Bhakti comes from engaging the senses in the service of the Lord of the senses. So how do we do that? Best is we can sit down and just chant Hare Krishna. If we can't just do that, then what are we going to do with our eyes, our ears, our nose, our hands, or you know, our tongue? Like that. Right? So then we have so many, you know, you're not satisfied just chanting Hare Krishna, okay, here's other mantras to hear. You know, then you can see the deity, smell the nice incense, taste the nice prasadam. You know, you can do so many things with your hands and for the deities, dance with these. I mean, so many different aspects there. So it becomes the perfect balance in this age for the conditioned soul who is trying to perfect his life by chanting Hare Krishna. So these have been given by Krishna. Krishna takes his bath. In Golok Vrindavan, he takes his bath. You know, he takes bath 3 times a day. It's just the way it is. You know? That's just the way Krishna, that's the way Krishna does it. We may say, oh, it's just all, we don't, but Krishna likes it. Takes his bath in the morning, he gets up, takes his bath, you know. All these things, brushing his teeth, cleaning the tongue. That's because Krishna does these things. In Braj Vrindavan, Krishna takes a tongue cleaner and cleans his tongue. After he brushes his teeth with the twigs, he washes his mouth out. He washes his hands, his feet. You know? He put oil on, he takes his bath, he dry him. Like that. He dresses, he puts tilak. All these things he does. These are happening in the eternal pastimes. So deity worship means we're getting that opportunity to take part in these eternal pastimes. But since we don't have the love, it has to be given to us in the form of rules so that we do everything right. You know, we first brush the teeth, then clean the tongue, then wash the mouth, you know, then take a bath. Otherwise, it's very common in the West that you're good, upstanding, you know, yuppie gentleman, you know, goes to the toilet, takes his shower, and then shaves. Very standard. You shave after your bath. You know, because that's kind of like a fine point. You've done the gross cleaning and all that and that, and then you get into your fine, your nails and your beard, and this and that, and, you know, all these things. But you just contaminate yourself in this way. So the very thing is to do those things first and take your bath last. You know? You understand? So otherwise, we wouldn't know. So unless the rules tell us, and those rules are given by Krishna, how are we going to know how to do things as Krishna likes it? So it's very important is that we understand these rules are there because this is the way Krishna likes it. But Krishna doesn't like it that you follow the rule just to follow the rule and you think then it's done. No, these rules are there to help you reawaken your love for Him and do these things not according to rules but based on love. In the spiritual realm, all these activities are done. These different items of worship are done out of love of Krishna. And so, as a beginning point, we're doing it because it's out of love for Krishna by following His rules. We don't have love, so our love is manifest by following those rules. And if we understand that that's the goal, is to develop that love, and this is the way through which we can offer, then we're very careful to, so we don't get caught up in the rules, attached to the rules themselves. Right? We're attached to serving Krishna, we're not attached to the rules. Then by following these rules, I can mature into pure love of God. Does this make some sense? Right there. Okay. So one must be qualified. So it's not just that we follow these rules, and just because we're following, we think that everything's done. Or, you know, we don't see any need, and so we just follow anyway. I mean, we just don't follow it. We just, you know, we just simplify, make up our own thing, this, that. Don't care. We have to have that balance. So the Lord resides eternally, permanently, Krishna Kshetra speaking. The Lord resides permanently and eternally in the Shaligram Shila, and therefore no installation ceremony is required. The Skanda Puran states, quote, "There is no pratishtha installation ceremony necessary for worship of Shaligram Shila, which is simply perform a special elaborate worship when one begins worshipping the Shaligram Shila." Skanda Puran quoted in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. So we see here, here's one of those handful of verses out of the Skanda Puran. Skanda Puran, I think, is 100,000 verses, something like that. It's one of the biggest of the Puranas. And the Acharyas have gone through. Nana Shastra Pahara Nakanipano. Saddharma Samstapako. Saddharma. They've gone through and picked out the verses. You know, so you can read those five verses from Skanda Puran and forget the rest of it, and you'll have gotten the essence. And Krishna Kshetra continues, "The Skanda Puran further discloses the special glory of the Shaligram Shila. Quote, the Lord resides in many worshipable forms, but of all forms the Shaligram Shila is the best." Skanda Puran is quoted in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. So the shaligram is seen as directly the body of the Lord. Therefore, it doesn't require an installation. It is the Lord directly. It always has been. It always is. It always will be. There's a mountain in the Himalayas. I think it's called Annapurna. And then that mountain is also mentioned in the scriptures. I don't know if he wants to quote it here. But that mountain is Vishnu. He comes as this mountain. I'm not sure exactly why he comes as the mountain, but he's there. I think maybe in connection with Tulsi's curse. Because she curses him that he'll come as a stone, and he curses her that she'll come as a tree. So in this way you get Tulsi and Shalikram. So then there are these demons in the shape and form of these special kind of worms that eat stone. It means there are worms that eat stone. That's their food. That's what they eat. So then, like when the Stapatis go looking for stone to carve deities, then they go out to the mountains that have the good quality granite, and this is at least in South, and they look for those stones that have these wormholes in them. Because they only eat living stones. They don't eat dead stones. You know? Just dead ones aren't so tasty. You know, they eat living stones. So then they go and they find those. They're called jiva stones. So then they take that stone. They cut that stone out. And then they carve the deities from those. Right? You've heard that. So then that kind of worm, these demons took the form of those worms with really powerful and ferocious teeth. And they were very big-sized worms. And so they went, because they knew Annapurna is Vishnu, and they go and attack the mountain, and they eat and carve and chew on the mountain. And this way, by the Lord's arrangement, then they chew out all the different shapes of the Shaligram Shilas and all that. And then they come from the mountain, and they come down into the Gandaki River. Because Annapurna is right next to the Gandaki.
He also said Gandaki is the hair of Vrishnadevi.
The hair of Vrishnadevi.
It's also a different person. So then Shaligram is again together.
Uh-huh. So he's always in the... So that's why he likes the water. So that must be why he likes being left wet. You leave ours wet?
Yes.
Yeah, but the main one you dry. Okay. Because that's Vrinda's hair.
Two kinds of shalagram, mountain born and water born. The ones in the water are more auspicious than the ones outside the water. So there's two shalagram together.
Uh-huh. But they don't roll down into the water?
Some do, some don't.
Oh, you mean?
The rough ones are mountain born and the smooth ones are the.
But they all stay in the mountain. They just some go into the water, and then from the water makes them smooth.
Yeah.
And if not, then they stay. Yeah, because I've heard that also up at Muktinath, which is 2,000 feet above, you can find shaligrams up there. So those must be the mountain born.
Yeah. That's where she goes. I need to remember that mountain.
Uh-huh. And then the water ones. I see.
Why is it called Annapurna, something
that is
food?
That I'm not sure. Why is it called Annapurna? Annapurna is just what the locals up there call it. No, the Shastras it mentions it as Annapurna. I'm not sure why. That I don't know. We've only just come across for understanding the Shaligram side, why it's Annapurna. Because it's no story really has an end, you know. It's told in one Purana, and then another Purana will give another aspect of it, bringing out, just like the one of the... that one lady. Did I tell that here? No, I told that. Where did I tell that? I don't remember which lady it is, but there's a verse that gives eight most chaste women. You know? And then one of them is her husband was a leper. Did I say telling that story here? Because I told it the other day. Oh, I was telling it to Agatha. So then she was carrying, her husband was a leper, And he had leprosy so bad he couldn't really move around very good. You know, I mean, maybe around the house, but not to go out. But he had a desire to visit this very renowned high-class prostitute. So then, you know, she went to the prostitute and, you know, told her the whole thing, like this and that. And then arrangements were made that he would go there. So I'm not sure if it was going or I think it was coming back in the morning. When she was coming back in the morning, she's carrying the husband. And his leprosy wounds are so bad, and, you know, they're smelly and rotten and all kinds, you know, disgusting and all this kind of stuff. That as they're walking by, then I think it's, who was the sage who was skewered on the pole? And then he got upset with Yamaraj.
Mandukya Muni.
So this Mandukya Muni happened to be on the pole at the time. You know, because he was in Samadhi before, and they just came and captured him, and then they put him on this pole, and he still was in Samadhi. He didn't know he was on this pole. So he's in his, you know, he thinks he's in his ashram. And as she's going by with her, you know, not so pleasantly, you know, smelling husband, then the smell entered his nostrils and broke his meditation. And because of that, I mean, who comes out in the forest, who comes along with something disgusting smelling and that? The forest is nice, clean, and fresh and all that. So that means for something bad smelling to be in his ashram, someone had to bring it there on purpose. So he immediately cursed whoever, you know, has broken his meditation because of this smell. And they will die before the sun rises. Because he couldn't really tell what's going on. It's dark. You know? And he's just come out of his meditation. He's probably not fully conscious of the externals. Just been broken. And then she, you know, just keeps on walking and says, you know, then fine. The sun won't rise today. You know? But it means, so I just cursed the husband. Okay, you know, he shouldn't be smelling bad and he shouldn't be breaking saintly person's meditation. So the what do you call it? The curse stays intact. But the sun won't rise, therefore he won't die. So because of her chastity, the sun couldn't get into his chariot. You know? So then, you know, this was a bit disturbing to, you know, the others around who know him, you know, because he's normally quite regular and everything, but he couldn't move. He couldn't get into his chariot. And then when it was kind of like understood what is the implications of all this, then the demigods got upset. They went to Brahma. Brahma came and talked to the lady and said, you know, what's going on here? So she said, you know, what do you mean, what's going on here? She said, well, you know, you're keeping the sun from rising. And that means that so many living entities in the universe don't get sun, and they're going to be very highly inconvenienced. And she said, well, what can I do? It's my duty to protect my husband, so, you know, that's their problem, you know. They have people who are supposed to protect them, so, you know, let them worry about it, you know. I'm doing my duty. So then Brahma's explaining this, that, you know, for one leper, you know, it's like, you know, we can't have the whole universe, you know, die. Like that, and he said, you know, she was very insistent. It's her duty, you know, as the wife and all that. So then Brahma struck a deal with her. Okay, you do one thing. You let the sun rise, let him die, and when he's died, then I'll bring him back to life with a new youthful body, no leprosy or anything. So with that, then she agreed. So then, you know, the sun got into the chariot, the sun rose, and then, you know, he died. Brahma sprinkled him with his water from his mandala, and he came back to life as, you know, young, very handsome youth, and, you know, so wife was very happy with that, and he was very happy. So that's one part of the story. The same story has been told from the angle of Mandukya Muni. Whole thing in the end, and how he got on there, you know, the whole thing, he's in his ashram, and then he's doing his meditation, some dacoits came, and the police were after them, so then they hid in the ashram, and the police came and just rounded up everybody, including the sage, because they figured he must be hiding them there, so he's part of the ring, he looks like a sadhu, but he's not. So they took them all to the king. And the king said, you know, stick the maple on these sticks. So they did that, including Mandukya Muni. And then after when Mandukya Muni came to, you know, then after Mandukya Muni, you know, it was noticed after 3 days that this person is still alive. So, you know, because nobody's alive after 3 days. So they went and told the king. And then they understood that this is a great stage, you know, and made a big mistake. So the king came. And then you know, had him taken off the pole and all this, looking for forgiveness, this, that, so many things, rolling on the ground, crying, you know, beating chests and all this kind of stuff. And then the sage is very, you know, pleased and all this and that. And then that story's over. Then we wonder how is it that Yamaraj came as Vidura, because it goes back to the same story. That then, after that, Mandukya Muni knows it's not the king's fault, this and that. It's all happening by karma and the modes of nature. So, you know, Yamaraj is controlling all this stuff. So he went to Yamaraj and said, you know, hey, what's going on? He says, when you were a little kid, then you saw an ant, and you took a little sharp, you know, thorn, and you poked the ant. So then this was the reaction. You know, and he got upset, saying little kids don't know what's going on and all this and that, how they can get the reaction. So then he said, you told him you're not qualified to do the service, so why don't you go get some good association? So, he cursed him to take birth as a Shudra on the earth. Like that, but Yamaraj is quite happy because it's a time of Krishna's pastimes, and then he took birth as Vidura, and then he took all that good association. So that comes out of the story. Then you have another story, is you're wondering, well, okay, in this whole thing, now what's happening? You have this nice chaste wife and making all these arrangements for the husband. What about, you know, doesn't this husband learn anything out of this? You know, does he remain a jerk to the whole thing? You know, things like that. So then you have the part of the story where then this prostitute understands the whole thing, this, that, and then she makes. You know, when the husband comes and all this and that, and then she goes and takes a bath and decorates herself very nicely, and then they cook something very nicely. And when she brought everything in it, in the same, she took all the preparation she cooked, divided them into two. One set of the preparation she put in gold vessels, and one set she put in iron vessels, you know, bowls, like this. So she put it there in front of him. So he had these doubles. So he looked at it and he understood that the preparations are the same. So he asked, you know, why put the same preparation in a gold bowl and you've also put it in an iron bowl? Because it's the same. So the prostitute said, exactly. You know, he said, association with women is the same. Whether it's in a gold, you know, a form that you think is gold or a form that you think is iron. So he says, you already have your wife. You can get association there. Why do you come to me? Just because you think I'm gold and she's iron. So that story is also there. So all these stories are in there in connection with this. Right? So like that, is, you know, you may know some parts of the story. It doesn't mean you know all the parts of the story. Because they're not necessarily all in one shastra. Some are in one, some are in another. Depending on which aspect they're bringing out. You know? You understand? That means you're more kind of like, yeah, depending on what you want to bring out. So like some will describe the thing, the Annapurna, the mountain and these demons and that side of it. Oh, then another thing is then how is it that Krishna became the mountain and Vrinda became the river and the Tulsi, and then there's that whole thing there of how the cursing and all that goes on. You know, so like this is so, but depending upon what is the angle, that one will be brought out. That Shastra will deal with it. The Rajasic Puran deals with all the cursing and all the insanity there. Sattvic Purans will deal with the mountain and the Shaligrams and going into the river and all these different things. And the glories of the Shaligram, the markings of the Shaligram. Right? Means the Rajasic Puran is not giving that at all. Who's interested? Who cares? They just want to know about the juicy details of, you know, all this emotional exchange, you know, like that. So it just depends upon what you want, then you get that part of the story. You know, you don't get the whole story. You only get part of the story. That's why the different dimensions, you should not use one shastra against another and should not criticize any shastras that are, you know, in glorification of the Lord, because they may be coming from different angles and they're just telling those parts of the story. They don't tell anything wrong, they just tell that part of the story that interests those people. They don't tell the rest of it. You know, like Bhagavatam would say, you know, Santanu was very attracted by Ganga Devi, and then, you know, then you had, you know, the children there, and then, you know, some of the things like that. And this way, Bhishma was one of the children, and like that. It's a few verses, only finished. The Mahabharata will get into elaborate description of how much emotional attraction and attachment Santanu had for Ganga Devi. You know, features of the body attracted him in which way, and, you know, all that, like that. It just gets 3 pages worth.
Right? All the English traditions don't translate some of the local phrases
more. Yeah. Oh, because it just gets right into detail. You know? Like that. So that's why Vidura comes to, I think, Markandeya, and he says, I've already heard the Mahabharata, I've already heard all these things. Now I want some substance, you know? You know, we're tired of hearing about Santanu and how he's so lusty after Ganga Devi, and, you know, like this. So we want to just hear what is the essence. So then he was instructed, you know, the same instructions that had been received from Krishna himself. You know, it means that Krishna was speaking of Uddhava, right? Yeah, so that means that whole Uddhava Gita, the whole, like, 11th canto, well, that would have been explained to Vidura. The same instructions. It's very interesting, that whole, if you look at it really carefully, the whole Uddhava Gita basically is like very similar to many of the aspects as Gita. The Uddhava Gita, just taking it to more detail, going to more depth, taking each aspect, like, you know, how to worship, and the system of worship. But the whole system of jnana and karma is brought out there very heavily. This whole thing of nishkam karma yoga is just like, it's just like drilled in there. It's like, this is the path. It busts. There's nothing else. You know, it's illusion to think that by karma alone, or by jnana alone, or yoga alone, or by some other process, you're going to get back to nishkam karma yoga, finished. It's like the 11th canto just says it, that's it. Gita says it clearly, but still sometimes you can get bewildered. The 11th canto just, because it's for devotees, so they have the faith. Gita gives you that space that even if you don't want to follow that, then there's sakam karma yoga. If you don't want to follow that, okay, there's karma yoga. Or if you accept karma yoga but you don't accept Krishna, you can still just follow nishkam karma yoga, but you're not doing it for Krishna. That's why Krishna always said, doing duties without attachment, without being, with understanding you're not the doer, for pleasing me. He always ends it with that. Because you can be a nishkam karma yogi by performing prescribed duties in knowledge, but not doing it for Krishna. You will be elevated to the platform of knowledge. You'll get to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So then at that time, you surrender. Otherwise, you know, you either fall back down or you'll get to the Brahman. But generally, no one gets that far. That's the thing. Only devotees have the determination to go, to keep going. But 11th canto doesn't give you that space. It's nishkam karma yoga. Or, you know, you're not going to get very far very quickly. You know, it's just like, that's it. It's very strongly brought out there. You know, just details, more and more details are there. You know? So it's very, so depending upon what someone wants, that scripture will bring that out. Therefore, you get all these different details. Yes.
The question was the installation of Shalagri. His installation in Hungary. Shri Ramesh brought up the point to put 2 shakrams in the base of ongoing of any time. In that case, would you still install the deities or not? And I'm just having shakrams in the base of the deity.
You'd still install the deity. The deity still has to be installed. You know, one can do that. But generally they do ratnanyas. They put ratnas in there. Sometimes they put a yantra there. I'm not sure if I've heard about it. I think Shalik comes there. I think I've heard you Hindu Jagannath has something like 1 lakh of shaligrams in his altar, in his base. But generally, I think it's not a major practice of ours, because we don't get so much into this whole Ratnanyas. It means that in the South Indian deities, the deity has his base, you know, small base, that goes into a big base. And by being, and in that base, there's place for putting all the jewels and all the special different things. And they make this special herb cement, and the deity's fixed in there, and it's fixed. So that's why they say the unmovable deity is immovable. You can't move them. You know, it's just, they don't move. You know, like you see in Sri Rangam or these other places. If there's a big flood, the deity's flooded. He doesn't go somewhere. They take the Utsavamurti and he goes somewhere and gets worshipped. Big deity, the river floods, underwater, he's underwater. It's finished. That's just the way it is. And then when the water goes down, then they come in, clean everything up, and then, you know, start to worship again. A few times, the Sri Rangam has gone underwater and been like that for a long time. Not just, you know, of rainy season, but I think for, I'm not sure how long, years. I'm not even sure there's not centuries. A long time has spent, but he hasn't been worshipped. He just hides under the water. Because he's on an island in the river, so if the water level goes up, it gets flooded. But now it's where? That's in... He's in Tamil Nadu, right? Yes, so they put a dam on the Kaveri in Karnataka. So they keep all the water in Karnataka. So then there's never enough water in the river to flood. So I don't think there's any problem these days. So, but generally our deities, we don't do like that so much. We may fix them a little bit, but generally not so much. We're not... that aspect of the ritual is, we may fix them, but it doesn't become a major aspect of the ritual. Ratnanyas is a very important aspect in the, you know, in the, especially the followers of the Vaikuntha padatis of the Pancharatra.
Did you do it?
Huh?
Did you do it?
You didn't put it.
No.
Yeah. But it's there. It's a bona fide system. Just that we don't emphasize it so much. We emphasize other aspects. You know? Like we'll emphasize a big Abhishek. Well, in South India, they don't get into a big Abhishek at all for the deity. They do an Abhishek before, but after the installation, when they do everything, and then they put all the mantras into this pot. They've been doing this, they have this pot, and they've been doing these yajnas for weeks or days, and everything's going into this pot. And then they come, they do the nas on the deities, and then they take the coconut off the pot and stick the mango leaves in the water. And they sprinkle that water on the deity, bang, and all those mantras go in, that deity's installed. So that's their Abhishek. So you see, for them, that's just, for them, it's like the Lord descend, finished. You know, that whole thing of on reverence. Here's the moment, and everybody's there, you know? And then all the Brahmins are there chanting, and the whole thing, and everybody's standing, and then they come out and do that prokshana, and finished, you know? But for us, it's a whole different flavor, because of the Vrindavan mood. So it's that we, you know, we have a big Abhishek, you know, like that. And so for us, those kind of things, and the offering and the dressing of the deities is more important, like that. And the pratishtha is done as a private thing. You know, just a few devotees go and, you know, chant the mantras into the nyasas. So in other words, when the shaligram, the new shaligram is there, then one just has an elaborate worship to start. You know, then you do, you know, some nice panchamrita bathing, and, you know, some nice, very carefully done, nicely done worship. And that just signifies you start. Same thing with the spiritual master. It's the same. There's no installation of the spiritual master. just you have an elaborate beginning of worship. So you might have an abhishek and this and that, but it's not that you've installed, you've begun the worship. Right? Shaligram, you begin the worship. Spiritual master, you begin the worship. Arch of Murti, you install. Or any of the other forms, the eight deities, you install. I guess one in the mind is by remembering that's the installation. But, okay. Are there any other questions? Because now we get into another major topic. We'll do that tomorrow. Any other questions? Any questions from... What is that? So what is the question about the flower?
Oh, I'm not sure. But you heard what?
She had discussed, I had asked you that question before.
What did I say?
And you said it's okay, it's necessary because in Los Angeles, they do that because they don't have in cities and stuff. So you can't get, it's not so accessible.
I mean, could do. Don't have, but it should actually be something that smells good. Because you have to be very careful of chemical scents and all that, especially if it's going to touch the body and that, because they can have reactions and stuff. Natural stuff doesn't, chemicals do. And, but it should be done very delicately, you know. So flowers have a delicate smell, they're not overpowering. You know, in other words, you don't dip flowers in the oil. And, you know, it has to be done very nice. But, and it should match, you know. You put couscous smell in a rose. You know? Yeah, yeah, but let's say you have a rose that has no scent. Don't put, you know, patchouli in it or something like that. Try to match the smells. That'd be interesting. Rose with kadamba smell. Yes. Anything else? What do you have? Another Russian question. Brewing on the horizon. Another one? When a flower falls off the plate,
yeah.
Or falls onto the plate,
just
falls off the plate, onto the floor. So what's the question? Generally, you would just forget it, unless that's the only flower on the plate. I guess in the West you can have situations like that. See, certain questions like this, it's like in India there's so many flowers, you know, you just, you know, you put 20 flowers there, one falls off, you know, it's nice. And I guess there, if you only have one, it falls off.
Onto the flesh like this.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that. Some devotees, they put the flower, and put the thumb, they put their four fingers, the palm underneath the plate, and put the thumb on top of the stem of the flower and offer it just to make sure it doesn't fall off. Yeah, I guess you could have a special plate that's got a little, what do you call it? Yeah, got a hole in it, got a pin through it or a thing, and you can screw a nut down on top of it. It's best is to avoid the flower falling off. If there's a bunch of flowers, one falls off, don't worry about it. But if you only have one flower, then you should be more careful. Generally, if you just started the worship, if you just started and it fell off, then you might do Prabhupada and this and that. But if you've been offering it but didn't finish and it falls off, then I just take it that that's the end of the offering and go on to the next item. The Lord didn't like the flower, or he liked it so much, or something.
In Hungary, on August 20, there was a nationalist day. So for the evening after the afternoon elitist request, they put out a national flag on the lower shelf of the altar. The audience was watching during Gaurati, and a flower from Radharani's hand, it didn't fall out, it kind of like jumped out and knocked the flag off the altar.
Yes. On this note. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.